listening to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. This is episode number 861. My name is Camden Busey. As usual, I'm in Libertyville, Illinois, in between two trips. So I was down in on vacation with my wife for a week, or most of a week. I spent a week at PCA General Assembly in Richmond, Virginia. I popped into the office studio just on a Saturday to record some, because I'm going to be heading out for the URCNA General Synod and the OPC General Assembly. But I'm glad that we're able to connect with none other than Jim Cassidy here on a Saturday afternoon in June. Jim is the pastor of South Austin OPC in South Austin, Texas, as well as president of our board here at Reform Forum, and he serves as a faculty member as well. Jim, it's good to see you. It's been a while since you've been on the program podcast. I had someone actually ask me on one of my trips if you why you weren't on the podcast anymore, and I said, it's nothing personal. I said, I ask.
He got fired.
He's busy. So how are you?
I'm doing well, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, things are going good. Things are going well. The PCA GA was always fun. It's always a blast and exhausting. They got done like 3:20 or something on a Thursday. So they do a lot of work in committee to prepare and all this. So this isn't a criticism, but it's just so different that they can finish basically in, a day and a half. Yeah. And the full day doesn't even go late, you know? And then we're always meeting for like 10 straight days from 8:30 AM to 9 PM even on Saturday. It's very different.
OPC ministers and elders look so much older than PCA guys. It's just, you know, General Assembly just sucks the life out of you.
Yeah. It was a blast. Got to meet with lots of folks. It's nice now. I've been 4 years in a row, so I think a lot of those relationships continue to strengthen, to deepen, to broaden, but they also, there's kind of like compounding effects. It just feels great to reconnect with people. And we had a great time, Ryan, yeah. Noah, and I. And I'm looking forward to my own assembly with the OPC, and also popping in Escondido for the URCNA GA. So all this most likely will all be done by the time this episode comes out. I think we're tentatively scheduled for the 28th of June. So everyone will know what happened, and Lord willing, it'll all be great news. So today we're going to report on some matters of global theological education. In last week's episode, I shared a bit about that and shared a bunch of clips with different Reformed missionaries and pastors serving around the world, as well as some folks that I met at PCA General Assembly. Jim, you don't know anything about this because this episode hasn't been published yet. So I'm speaking to the future listener from our perspective. But it's wonderful to see what the Lord is doing and how the Lord is working. And Jim has been able to see that as well. I took a recent trip to Vienna and Austria. In the past, I've been to Colombia to teach, and Jim's been to Colombia as well. But most recently, Jim was in Philippines teaching, and he's been doing some work also with and through Heidelberg Seminary. And we're going to be talking about that today and get a report on Jim's labors in the Philippines, and also speak about, more generally speaking, the Reformed Church around the world and the particular needs that the church has with regard to Reformed education. So there are lots of opportunities, but there are significant needs. So I know this has been a theme we've been working on here at Reformed Forum, but it's kind of the space that we're in, seeking to present every person mature in Christ. And the Lord has seen fit to allow us to do that in many ways, to help with that activity by providing not only podcasts and books and the occasional event, but also online video curriculum, distributing that around the world for free now to, at least on our website, at least to 6,000 students in 89 countries, but closing in on 18,000 subscribers on YouTube, and then who knows how many people who are watching the videos who don't even subscribe. So it's quite amazing, and there's a great hunger for it around the world, so we're excited to continue our labors and hopefully to do even more in the future if the Lord so wills. So, Jim, why don't you tell us a bit about your trip and maybe even just back up to how you got connected with Heidelberg and the kinds of things you've been doing?
Yeah, it's great. So the story goes back several years now, we have an elder in our church whose wife is from the Philippines. And so he had gotten, I guess he was doing research to find out what is the state of the Reformed Church in the Philippines. And he came across Pearl of the Orient Covenant Reformed Church, which is a small Reformed, continental Three Forms of Unity denomination in the Philippines. There's more Reformed presence there. I won't go into those details, at least just not yet. But anyway, so it turns out that Heidelberg Seminary does the training, the theological training for candidates at in the Pearl of the Orient Covenant Reformed Church. So our elder reached out to the president of Heidelberg Seminary and was interested to know more, to learn more. And our session invited the president, Maynard Koerner, down to South Austin Presbyterian Church to come and speak to us about the work of Heidelberg Seminary in the Philippines. And not just the Philippines, but they also have a theological education outreach in Kenya as well, I believe. So for a small denomination and a very small seminary, they're punching above their weight class big time in terms of reaching theological students throughout the world. Anyway, so he came down, everybody sort of hit it off really well. Maynard spoke to our presbytery while he was down here and made some good connections. Since then, of course, as you know, Maynard has been at our conference in October telling people about Heidelberg Seminary, and he's been an encouraging supporter of Reform Forum. And anyway, so as Maynard and I were talking one day, as he was visiting us, he's made two trips to visit us in Austin. He asked if I would be willing to teach the online teach in the online program for the international students and in the Philippines, particularly. So I agreed to that. And September of last year, coming up on almost a year now, I taught prolegomena for Heidelberg Seminary with students in the Philippines, and I had an absolute blast. And so what ended up happening is sort of halfway through the semester, I was just talking to the students during the break and trying to learn a little bit more about the Philippines. Where are you from? Oh, where in the Philippines is that? Talk about things like food and language and culture. And anyway, one of the students said, Dr. Jim, you must come here. So I said, okay, all right. I said, I'd be happy to visit. I said, all I need is an invitation, and I'd be happy to come visit. So at the end of the semester, one of the pastors of the Pearl of the Orient Covenant Reformed Church that was sitting in on the class as an auditor sent me an invitation from his consistory in the Philippines and invited me to come to teach some pastors through a seminary that he is starting over in the Philippines called the Lord's Seminary. And the Lord's Seminary is located very remotely in a remote area, a remote village called Laredo. It's in the section, the region of the Philippines called Mindanao, which is the most southern region of the country, which consists entirely of islands. There's no mainland, it's all islands. There are three parts to the Philippines or regions. Luzon, Visayas is in the middle. Luzon is in the north, and then Mindanao in the south. And this is Pastor Rocky Simbahon. And I don't know if I've pronounced his last name correct or not. So, Brother Rocky.
You are from New Jersey. We recognize.
Yeah. I'm not from the Philippines. Pastor Rocky, I apologize if I didn't get your name right.
Just but, so you know, for our Filipino brothers and sisters, Jim doesn't pronounce our names correctly either. So,
Camdone. Can you?
Oh, brother.
So anyway, so Pastor Rocky was the one, along with his consistory, invited me to come and to teach village pastors. So we're talking about these are pastors who are in remote villages of a remote village. Okay, so these are, if you can imagine, they're evangelical pastors who have no theological education whatsoever. And so Pastor Rocky is desirous of teaching them Reformed theology and to get them up to speed. So I went over there to teach these pastors. We had a group of about 20, 25 pastors that came in from these villages, all on motorcycle. I taught a class on prolegomena, which was basically a history of Christian theology that I did and then expounded on Westminster Confession chapter one. So then after that, I went down to Davao City, which is in the southern part of Mindanao. And there I did two conferences, one on the doctrine of the church and another one that I did on the Book of Job, which I've done also for Reform Forum.
Yeah, my course is available. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then flew back up to Manila and drove 4 hours north, or was driven 4 hours north to a city called Dagupan. And there I taught a class on apologetics. So sort of an intro, the title of the course was The Reformation of Apologetics, and did a history of apologetics leading up to the time of the Reformation, then of course to the time of Antill, and tried to explain to the students, I don't know if I did well or not doing it, but just saying, this is the reason why, making an argument as to why apologetics needed to be reformed in the 20th century, and then explained Van Til's approach to apologetics, and just had a great time. The students were what we had, like 85 students come out for that.
Wow.
That was a really good turnout.
You effectively did the three total, I mean, they're all related, but three totally different topics. Wow.
Yep. Three different topics and four different topics and three different locations.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. So what was your overall sense in terms of the work there? Maybe we can talk a bit about the Reformed Church more specifically, because this is much more specific than just Christianity in Philippines. I mean, you're engaged in some really Reformed teaching, and these are confessional people desiring to learn confessional theology. I've been able to get to meet several people, lots of folks that are seeking to plant, and they're engaged in ministry in confessional churches and burgeoning denominations, but a lot of people might not know that that's out there. So how did it get there in the first place, and what was your takeaway? What was your assessment of the state of the Reformed faith in the Philippines?
Yeah, it's it's strong. It's small, but it's strong. I was impressed with the zeal that the people had for the Reformed faith and for Reformed theology and for Reformed biblical teaching. That was very encouraging. The Pearl of the Orient Covenant Reformed Church, and then you also have an independent Presbyterian church pastored by James Chu in Quezon City, which is just north of the downtown Manila area. It's part of the Metro Manila area. And these churches are growing, they're strong, they're vibrant. The churches that I served down in Davao, particularly, they have a church plant going on in Davao. So they have the Mother Church, which is on the west side of Davao City, and downtown, like the very downtown area, they're planting a church. And morning and evening services are well attended, enthusiastically attended. The fellowship is very, very warm. And I received quite a few comments about appreciation for Reform Forum, unsolicited by me. I mean, I wasn't going representing Reform Forum, as you know. I was just sent by my church.
Right.
And so I didn't go up there and start hanging up banners of Reform Forum or anything, but people were coming up to me and just they knew who I was and saying how much they appreciated the ministry of Reform Forum, how much they listened to Reform Forum, the classes and the books. And of course, I brought Reform Forum books over with me to share with some of the pastors. So that was very encouraging, especially in a country that is predominantly Roman Catholic. So you do have a section of the Philippines in Mindanao, which is strongly Muslim, but the rest of the country is Roman Catholic in its politics and almost in every way. And so Protestant churches are in the minority, and where you do find Protestant churches, it's oftentimes of a Pentecostal or charismatic sort. It's not of a Reformed or even more historically Protestant, like Lutheran or Anglican. Those are there, those churches are there, but they're not at all very strong. The one thing that they are lacking over in the Philippines is a strong, established, reformed seminary. There are seminaries over there, but none of them are categorized as established and confessional. So I told you about the Lord's Seminary that Pastor Rocky is starting over there. It's a wonderful work that will be confessional, but that is not yet established. It's still sort of a work in progress. And it's in a very remote area of the Philippines, making it difficult for students to study there. So really what the need of the hour in the Philippines is to have an established on-site seminary, preferably in a place like Manila, because it's so populated and it's easily accessible through its international airport and whatnot. So anyway, I would say that the state of the Reformed Church there is strong, enthusiastic, energetic. They take nothing for granted. They're very thankful. It just was a great experience.
I was speaking with quite a few people in my trip to Budapest. I went to a Reform colloquium there, and people that have been following along with what we've done have already seen some video interviews I did briefly with many of the people there. But that's a recurring need as well. And there are Reformed seminaries in various locations throughout Europe, but even they struggle often with not having the financial support or even qualified faculty to be able to teach. There are ways that sometimes this can be augmented where people can help or assist and they make do. Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary, for example, I've heard has done some interesting and innovative augmentation with some seminaries that they partner with around the world. So they have something of a global program where I think they offer an MA. They don't offer an MDiv through this Puritan program. And I'm sure that someone from Puritan would be able to explain this and describe this much more detail than I, and we'd be happy to have that conversation. That'd be a fun conversation. But at least one seminary in Gießen, Germany, will partners with Puritan, and the courses that go towards the MA are taught virtually through the lectures, the recorded lectures and those types of things online. But the instructor who's on site they'll grade the exams and do all this sort of thing. They'll do that in German. So the courses themselves are in English, but then they get graded. The students can submit papers in German, and the local facilitator does it in German. And then all their other courses are in German. So the students end up graduating with a German MDiv, but then an American accredited MA as well, because that MA is built, it's part of the overall MDiv program. So ideally, the seminary would be able to just offer an accredited MDiv and have all the support that they need to be able to do that. That becomes extra complicated as well with the German government and accreditation and all that sort of thing. And then students don't want to go to a seminary that isn't accredited. So this is an interesting and creative way to provide an education in which students at least get some accreditation. So that's just one local example in Germany around the Black Forest that people are seeking to provide answers and to provide support for folks. But a lot of other countries, they don't even have that, which is good all told. But to find or to hear that there's a seminary starting up or thereabouts already at work, but yet small, in Philippines is really useful. What is the greatest challenge? Is it typically financial? Is it a pipeline of qualified faculty? All of the above? What would you say are some of the particular needs in Philippines?
I think both, at least as it's been explained to me, to have sort of to bring together confessional fidelity along with terminal degrees among faculty and the finances that are necessary to get something like that up off the ground. I'm no expert in the situation on the ground there. Somebody like James Chu would be. But it seems to me, at least as it was explained, that out of the ministers that they have over there, there are precious few, if any, that have terminal degrees to be able to constitute an accredited faculty. And then, you know, the finances are always a challenge, because in order to get somebody over there, in order to get professors, perhaps from somewhere in the West or even other places in Asia, over there is very expensive, because they need, they're going to expect higher cost of living or higher income in order
standard
to
standard of living, usually
standard for
us
their
Westerners
country where they
can't hoof it.
Westerners, yeah, right. But anyway, so those are sort of the challenges that they're facing. The good news is that we're in a particularly unique situation to help them here in America, anyway. Because most of them understand English, they're taught, Filipinos are taught English from grade school, right on through school. So English is the vernacular in the education sector. But on the streets, if you will, or in the home, they'll speak either Tagalog or they'll speak their local dialect. But when they speak to Americans, they speak in English to them. So I was able to communicate fairly well, at least for me, as well as I can communicate to the Filipinos, and they were tracking with what I was saying. And then we would have question and answer time, fellowship, and they would, it's kind of funny, they'll be speaking to each other in their own particular language, and then they'll turn to me, and suddenly, just on a dime, they'll switch and begin speaking English to me. Quite remarkable. And most of them speak better English than I speak, which is not hard to do, but still nevertheless impressive. Wow. That they can turn on the dime like that, be able to speak a native language, Tagalog, which is the national language, and then go immediately to English when they face me. So pretty impressive. But I think part of the reason why Reform Forum has received such a hearing there in the Philippines is in part because the language barrier is not really a problem.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with Douglas Clawson a couple of years ago. Douglas is the OPC's, the General Secretary for the OPC's Committee on Foreign Missions. You and I have both been to Colombia with him on different occasions ourselves, and always have a great time with Douglas. He also serves as a board member here at Reformed Forum. And back when we were starting up Reformed Academy, which is just our section of our website and our initiative to provide online video courses to people, I was looking at the data and seeing where the students were coming from so that we could have an idea and possibly also know, you know, where we ought to focus our efforts, or if we ought to prioritize certain languages. And one of the, you know, you get the U.S. is the number one place in terms of people, most of our traffic is coming from the United States, but I think Philippines was like maybe third or fourth. So you get usually like US, then you might end up with various UK countries. Canada is often up there, although not as high as I would like. This is Canadian, our Canadian brothers, come on, we got to pick up the pace here and move up in the rankings. China is way up there. Or some people from New Jersey say Gina, and one guy from New Jersey says it. And then
it's huge. That's a huge country.
Gina is huge. And then huge. Philippines. And Douglas was suggesting, that there, that might be the due to the fact that there was some rather strong, CRC missionary influence in Philippines. Did you know anything about that? Is that the case?
Yeah, so
back
I don't
in the 50s, 60s, maybe, so quite a, you know, a while ago.
Yeah, I don't remember all the details. It was before the CRC sort of went belly up, right? So no offense to CRC people that may be speaking here, but there is the CRC of the Philippines, the CRCPH. So they established a presence there when the denomination here in America went liberal, the progressive, whatever you want to call it, there in the Philippines, it followed suit. And so sort of like how the URCNA broke off of the CRC, the Pearl of the Orient Covenant Reformed Church are churches that in part broke out of the CRCPH. So they're the you know, ongoing conservative, confessional, faithful denomination of the work that was started by CRC and A missionaries back. Yeah, wow. I think it was in the early to mid 20th century.
So what's the state of the group that you were working with in terms of their ecclesiastical structure? And then do they have an established presbytery, an established denomination? Where are we at here? And I'm curious, do we have ecumenical fellowship in any way with them?
Yeah, great question. So my wonderful host in Davao is Pastor Vic Bernalis. And we were talking about this actually on the bus ride from Dagupan back to Manila on my almost last day. And we were discussing ecumenicity. But before I get to that, just structurally, they have a classis. So they're too small right now to have multiple classes.
Sure.
So they just have one classis.
Sure.
And it consists of, I probably have this wrong, but I don't know, 8 to 12 churches, maybe. And they have less ministers than they have churches. This is a significant issue, a significant mm-hmm. problem. The church, and for those that are listening over there, if I get any of the facts wrong, please forgive me and please send in your complaints to Camden Busey.
We'll overdub them maybe later. So Jim, it'll be like an old kung fu movie. Jim says, there are six churches in the...
So anyway, the one church in Dagupan, they have been 10 years without a pastor. So not only are they having, not only is it a challenge to have a seminary there on location, but they're also having challenges with regard to churches being under provided for in terms of pulpit supply. So very, very difficult circumstances there. But anyway, the ecumenical stuff, I was talking to Pastor Vic about this, encouraging him to reach out to the OPC and to our ecumenical committee and CEIR and to begin conversations. They are a real legitimate denomination. I mean, they're small, but they do the work and they get together for their regular classes meetings. Mm-hmm. They have a book of church order. They have a form of government, directory mm-hmm. for worship, that so forth and so on. And they're doing really good work. They're desirous of planting churches and are planting churches, particularly there in Davao. Again, part of the problem is, do they have the men that are necessary for filling those pulpits and whatnot when those church plants become particularized? So there's a growing energetic increase of interest in the Reformed faith and Reformed churches. I'll just say one last thing here. It's quite interesting if you think about the situation up in Laredo, where Pastor Rocky is, the first place I went to teach these village pastors, who all to the man, very, very dear. And if Pastor Rocky, hypothetically, if Pastor Rocky's work is blessed mightily by the Lord, and each of those students representing a church in the surrounding villages become convinced of the Reformed faith and adopt Reformed confession, he can have, within the space of very little time, an entire classis there in that part of Laredo. You're talking about 20 to 30 pastors that have been associated with the Lord's Seminary with whom Pastor Rocky has contact. So that's pretty cool. And so I would just covet the prayers of our listeners as you think about the Philippines, as you think about what's going on over there. Pray for the work that Pastor Rocky, not just Pastor Rocky, but the whole denomination, Pearl of the Orient, is doing. But particularly there in Laredo, that those village pastors would receive the Reformed faith and adopt it as their faith and lead their congregations into a greater path of doctrinal fidelity and biblical truthfulness.
Yeah, that's wonderful. There's much of this. I found similar things when I was in Vienna. I went to a synod meeting of the ERKWB, the Germans say ARKWB, which is the Evangelical Reformed Church Westminster Confession. So many people who come to the OPC General Assembly will know, at least in the last 10 or 12 years, will know our dear brother Kurt Federle, who serves in Basel, Switzerland. He's a wonderful brother, so I was able to, he invited me, and I was able to attend as a guest. This was a working meeting, so they also just have a synod, as they don't have multiple classes. They function, you know, so it's like they're meeting every time. It's kind of like a general assembly or a presbytery meeting if you didn't have a general assembly. But that they would love to grow. And to they're doing the work. They got their book of church order, and they're meeting and have proper polity, and they're sending fraternal delegates to other denominational meetings and doing all the stuff. But it's just that there's a great need for qualified men to go into ministerial service to plant churches. And then also maybe as some of these ministers are looking to retire in a few years, they don't necessarily have anyone in the pipeline to take their place. And so you almost have to back up and think, well, what, you know, you find the immediate presenting problem, but then you try to get to the root of, well, why is that a problem? How do we address that? And that leads you to maybe an even more fundamental problem, which leads you to an even more fundamental problem. So you have to have a much bigger vision of how to ultimately to fix this. Because we can send, it's hard enough to find qualified Americans, you know, who can do the language work and can fit in with the culture and to send missionaries and do that work. We need that. We need to send people over there. But that's not ultimately the long-term fix that we want to have in German-speaking countries, neither in any other country. Ideally, you would have an indigenous church that's self-supporting, self-propagating, sending out its own missionaries and raising up and training their own ministers. That's the ideal. But if we can't get there today, then let's send missionaries. Let's send other people to train and teach. And then maybe the next generation will get closer to having a full indigenous church that's functioning properly according to the word of God and sending out its own missionaries, financially self-sustaining and propagating itself, self-propagating through the training and the discipleship of its own people. So I was speaking with Kurt and with our dear friend Tony Curto about this, and they used the analogy, the illustration of building a cathedral. So back in the medieval ages, if you wanted to build a cathedral, one of the first things they would do is they would think on such a long timeline, they would set up 200 years in advance of when they wanted that cathedral to be finished. So mind you, nobody who's planning this project is going to live to see this. But one of the first things they would do would be to plant the forest, right? So if you need the wood to build this large cathedral in 200 years, you need to start by planting the forest to have the materials to build with. Analogously, if we would need and want and desire that the Lord would provide indigenous ministers and a self-sustaining, of course with God's grace, but a self-sustaining, self-propagating indigenous church that's healthy, functioning fully according to the word of God, that's mature, there's so much groundwork that needs to be done. And some foundations that need to be poured and established. It's, to use another metaphor, it's like a garden. You have to cultivate it. The fruit just doesn't pop out. You know, there's a lot of work that goes in prior to the harvest, right? And so that's what we need. That's, you know, what I've been speaking with quite a few missionaries and pastors and scholars laboring around the world, trying to learn more about this. And you see similar issues in many different fields, but they're all kind of the same genus. And that is, there needs to be better education. And we're trying to figure out how to provide that in a way that's economical and affordable. But ideally, they would receive and provide their own education. We're just not there. So if we're not there yet, then what else can we do? And we can provide online video courses. We can potentially have reading groups or cohorts. We can do regional events or online virtual events. We can partner with one another, send people over on occasion for short-term missions. Long-term missionaries can go serve in labor and teach in a seminary. There's a million things that can be done, and the Lord is opening many doors, but we're frequently and constantly in prayer, thinking how best we can use our time, resources, how can we best be good stewards of what we're doing at Reform Forum and in our local churches and in our denomination in terms of trying to meet these needs.
Yeah, that's very good. And I think the analogy of the cathedral, I've never heard that before, but that strikes me as remarkably apropos in a number of these areas. What is particularly striking, though, about your experiences in Germany and in Eastern Europe.
They had it and they lost it.
They had it, right. They had it, they lost it. In the Philippines, it's kind of like, they, in terms of Reformed witness, I mean, they never had it before. It's a new thing, really, for them. So it's remarkable to think about how different these different contexts really are from each other, and how a one size fit all won't work. And I think that's why Reform Forum can be even now today, actually useful in building up and encouraging and supporting the Reformed Church throughout the world, because we're not issuing degrees. We're not constrained by accreditation at this point and those particular things. We can roll out these materials for free, thanks to the support of our listeners and our generous donors. And we can provide those materials to strengthen these churches, laying planting, as it were, the forest,
right,
in order that hopefully in years down the line, they will be so strengthened so that when they are in the position of more formal structured theological education, they're caught up to speed, right? I mean, when I was talking to these brothers over in the Philippines, I was quite amazed at the way, and I shouldn't have been, but I was, at the way in which they are tracking with everything that we're talking about over here. So everything from the issues concerning natural theology to issues of classical apologetics versus presuppositional apologetics, Vossian biblical theology, issues concerning Christian nationalism, theonomy, and two kingdom theology, all of those things, they're tracking with those conversations. They were very interested, especially the young men that I talked to, showed not only a great interest in these subjects, but a fairly substantial familiarity with the literature and with the jargon, with the players, the characters, if you will, over here stateside, who are talking about these particular issues. And so they're thanks to Reform Forum and of course other ministries that they tap into, they're able to stay up to speed, and hopefully when they are now positioned to be able to move forward, the forest will have already been planted, and then they just need to harvest the trees and build the cathedral.
I was speaking with, at that symposium or the colloquium, I was speaking with lots of people that were way more up to speed with a lot of these debates and issues than I was. And it's, I came to get to the bottom of this, and I even was asking questions if these brothers agreed. But I think they tend, the guys in Serbia and Croatia, other countries that I was, people I was speaking with who were where they were from, a lot of them are really, really committed to or spend a lot of time watching theological stuff on YouTube. And it, and partly it's because they don't have other Reformed people in their area. This is exactly why we started Reform Forum, remember? Like even before it was called that, where I came from a context where there I didn't have people to speak with. I came from a, you know, central Illinois city and didn't have a whole lot going on in terms of confessional Reformed people that I could meet with or speak with about the kinds of things I was interested in. And then eventually when I went to the seminary, I was able to have those conversations all the time. And Jim, you, me, and Jeff decided to start recording them and put them online before anyone even knew what a podcast was, even before the iPhone had apps. This was in January 2008. So I get it. Like, I feel the same way, but these brothers who are very eager and desirous of having Reformed fellowship and iron sharpening iron and speaking with actual people, they don't have it. So the next best thing is that they can listen on a podcast or watch a YouTube video and see other people dealing with the issues and hashing it out. So it's, in one sense, it's a great blessing that we have technology and for the moment able to use YouTube by promoting Reformed theological resources, but that can go away tomorrow. If Google changes their mind on how that would work, they could ban us. They have the opportunity and the ability to do that. It's their private property, and they're using us to make lots of money. But if they didn't want to anymore, then they just kick us off. You know, that wouldn't be the end of things for the Reformed faith or for the Reformed people online. We'd find other means to do it. But for the moment, YouTube is a pretty amazing and incredible thing. There's a lot of junk, lots of junk on there. But the fact that we can record these episodes or record our courses and then just put them online and anyone in the world can watch them with transcriptions instantly if they have an internet connection within, you know, within half an hour, maybe even 10 minutes of me uploading a file, it's going to be available. And people can watch and learn about Reformed theology. So it's absolutely amazing. Just 20 years ago, this would have been unheard of and wild. But right now, we could bring a guy into our studio, record a course, produce it, very inexpensively, but to a, you know, pretty professional level. Looks great, sounds great, but the content is amazing. It's never been taught. We did a whole 8-course curriculum on Van Til, and you know what?
That's not 8 classes, by the way. That's 8 courses.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like, you know, 18 incredible other courses, and we just put them on YouTube for free. And then some guy in Kenya or Philippines or whatever could just watch these classes. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. And yep, people are taking advantage of it. Yep. And so then the next step is, well, what else can we do? What more can we do? And people are eating this up, but, you know, although the distribution is practically free because of YouTube, there is expense in producing the resources and then also in mm-hmm. going to meet people and trying to help people connect the dots and partner with other organizations to promote this. We don't just want to be creating content and throwing it over a fence, not knowing what's happening with it. We want to be involved in encouraging people and helping people to develop healthy churches eventually. So That's what we've been working on here, and the fields truly are white for the harvest. They're ready, and there's lots of opportunity. It's more of a matter of focusing on specific needs where we are best gifted and suited to provide for specific needs, and there are many, and we're in those conversations. But then it's also a matter of support, not only prayerful support and volunteers and laborers to help serve with Reform Forum and other like-minded organizations, but principally financial support to raise the money necessary to do this work, which isn't much. I mean, in terms of leverage, in terms of return on investment, it's really strong, but it's still, from our perspective, you know, we still need the funds to do it. But if people have the funds, this is a wonderful leverage, an opportunity to really leverage your dollars for some significant, massive gains with people in need around the world.
And it's kind of cool. We're seeing it now. We're seeing the fruit now, even though the cathedral analogy continues, right? Like, when we're dead and in glory for 100+ years or whatever, if the Lord continues to tarry, there'll be more fruit. But praise God, and I'm thankful to the Lord that He's allowed us to begin to see some of the fruit of our labors now. And it's so encouraging to see what the Lord is doing in and through His people around the world. Mm-hmm. I just want to underscore, if I may, something that you said earlier, just about the material as being awesome. I mean, when you think about the courses, particularly that Lane has put out, right? I mean, these are, and of course, Carlton on his John Calvin course as well. I just want to underscore this. I mean, this is the level of material that Lane would teach at Westminster Seminary or at any other seminary that he might be teaching at. I mean, this is not Mickey Mouse dumbed down stuff. I mean, this is substantial, high level seminary classroom material
and postdoc
of the highest order.
Some
and
of his courses, right, quite literally, yeah, are more advanced than the PhD programs I took, not only at Westminster, but at the Catholic University of America and Temple University in the philosophy department. And it's not because they're inscrutable, it's just more advanced and it gets down to a more fundamental level. So some of the, yep, courses that we have recorded and that we produce and make available to anyone around the world are quite literally the state of the art in that field. There is nothing. You can't even go to a seminary and take those courses. I'm just speaking the truth. I'm not trying to be proud or puff up or pat ourselves on the back. That's just a fact. Now, you might not like his conclusions or our conclusions in terms of our Vantillian theology and our Darvossian convictions and that sort of thing. That's a different question. But just in terms of the actual content, what we're offering for free online does not exist anywhere. And that, I think that's worth saying and reminding people. But yet some, yep, people in Philippines can just take the course. If they've got an internet connection, they have access to all of it, all of it.
Yep. 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 And it costs them nothing, which is perfect, particularly in countries around the world, which perhaps are not at the same economic levels as we are here in the West, right? So this is ministry that they can afford to receive and then pass on to others. So the things that we're teaching here, they listen to, it gets filtered if they're pastors through their pulpit ministry and then to the people in the pews. I mean, that's where it comes down. And one of the things I was really encouraged about at the conferences in the Philippines is that other than the pastor's conference that I did, the other conferences were all well attended by lay people. So especially the stuff on apologetics and on Job. And again, so these aren't sort of like seminary theology geeks and just other pastors. I mean, these are God's people living, yeah, everyday life as they can, right, in the Philippines. And they got their mouths wide open, waiting to be fed the word of God. And it's just an awesome, awesome thing to see. And
that was my experience in Bogota as well, when I taught on, yeah, Lamentations, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was just packed. It was a majority of people from the church. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Great stuff. And the fact that God's given Reform Forum the opportunity to play a small part in that process is great. And I do want to just say small part. I mean, I recognize that there are many American ministries and ministers who are also having a ministry in the Philippines. It's not just Reform Forum. We're not the be all end all, but what we are providing, though, I think is going to be helpful and useful for the church. If I could just dig down on just one more thing here. When you listen to Lane's courses on apologetics and on Van Til's approach to apologetics, it's so much more than simply a strategy for defending the faith. It is that. But it's so much more than that. The content and the material of those courses is thoroughly and profoundly theological. He is giving a theology course, is really what it is, with a view towards application in the area of apologetics. Because what is Van Til doing? Van Til is seeking to bring the apologetic approach into conformity, more consistent conformity with the deep structures of our Reformed theology. And so when you go to those classes, not only are you learning how to defend the faith, but you're also learning some substantial, glorious truths that come from Scripture as summarized within the confessional standards of the Reformed Church.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing. What's next? You going back? What are we going to do? Are we going to take a cruise trip to Philippines?
Cruise trip. Oh my goodness, we'll be cruising for months.
We're gonna take a Maersk cruise in a shipping container. If anyone's interested, you know, we're gonna meet. There's a half rusted out orange shipping container down the street. We're gonna get in that as a reform group, and we're just gonna have a bucket in the corner, and we're just gonna sing psalms all the way to Philippines.
As long as there's an air conditioning unit in the container, that's all.
Oh man.
But yeah, I hope to go back early 2025. So we'll see. Those are plans in the works, and nothing's firmed up yet. But Lord willing, I'm aiming to go back early next year.
Great, so. Wonderful. And I'm hoping to get back to Europe sometime. I'd love to go visit the brothers in Germany and Switzerland, Austria. Get around. Wonderful things going on there. So if anyone's interested in these things or has some feedback or suggestions, head on over to community.reformedforum.org. It's a good place to chat and to talk. If you need to, you can also send an email to mail@reformedforum.org, and that will get to us, and we'll respond if we're able. We'd love to hear from you. And just keep all this in prayer. And think about also our conference coming up September 28th, 2024. We will be featuring the Great Commission. We're going to have 5 speakers speaking all on different portions of our Lord's words in Matthew 28. And we definitely have that in mind in terms of our desire here at Reformed Forum. I want to get you excited about it as well. So if you're interested in hearing more theological discussion about the Great Commission, then you can head on over to reformedforum.org/conference to find out more information about what we're going to be doing here in Grays Lake, Illinois on September 28th. But I do want to thank everybody for listening. We hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.